Welcome to Mentoring Moments. Mentoring Moments is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast. It is composed of clips taken from Jason's one-to-one and group mentorship sessions. Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us again on the podcast. And I'm here again with Ashley on one of our two weekly one-to-one mentorship calls. She's yet again has a very good agenda, but I also wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that we talked about just before off air. And this wasn't sort of part of the official agenda, but we weaved it into the agenda, which was, Ashley, you were saying to me, look, I know I need to be the face of the business. And with that founder's authority, I know in my gut that I need to be making content. I know that I need to start making myself more visible on social media. I know that I need to start having an audience and telling stories that people can care about and buy into. And long before you ever need to even consider monetizing an audience, right? You actually want to have an audience that you can have conversations with. But you were telling me, look, I'm not really that comfortable. I'm not comfortable putting out content. I'm not comfortable being the front face of our brand. I'm not comfortable putting myself out there. And I think my advice to you pretty much was, look, practice makes perfect. And when you first start out, you'll have a tiny audience anyway, so hardly anybody is going to see your content. So as you practice, as you just start getting consistent with your content effort, your skills and experience will make that content better over time, just by definition of practice. And you'll start getting more comfortable hearing your own voice coming out of the speakers of the laptop back at you instead of what you normally hear, which is the voice going out of your mouth, projecting forward. And so that was really my overall advice. What did you take away from that? And how did that hit you? And how do you think that might help you in terms of overcoming that fear and that anxiety of being that very public face of your brand?
Yeah, I think you're completely right. I know practice makes perfect, and it's never going to be great on the first try. And I know it's the right thing to do or the next thing to do because it's incredibly scary for me. And usually when things are scary, it means that it's a learning experience that needs to happen and improvement needs to happen there. So yeah, you're right. It definitely will be my next challenge. The good thing is I think I have another girlfriend of mine who's also an entrepreneur, and she's a co-founder of a pretty successful business. She already does podcasts, video content, and we've been looking for ways to share ideas and experiences and brainstorm and just create an environment for women founders or women entrepreneurs where they can relate, they can ask questions, they can just talk and feel a sense of purpose and a sense of like camaraderie. I have someone who could possibly partner with me on something like this. So that'll be like my training wheels before I go live myself. So yeah, I have to do some talking to her and see if that's something she would play around with me.
I feel like this might be a podcast in the making where you guys are the co-hosts of the podcast. That would be very cool. And you can interview each other, but you can also bring other women onto the podcast to share their journey as well. So it helps to, as you say, it takes the spotlight off you to where it's not on you 100%, but it's significantly on you. But I guess it takes out some of the apprehension where you're going, will I have anything to say? And the vast majority of people out there are better when they get asked questions. So when we first got on this call together, I just asked you what's been going on, what's been happening, and you were effusive because you're in this accelerator now where you're potentially gonna be in top three, you're potentially gonna get some industry funding because of the raw materials that you're working with in the ag space. You were fizzing, and that is inspirational. But what started it was me just asking you questions, right? And then you just feeling, oh, I can respond to this. And so by putting yourself in a position where you're getting asked questions by somebody else so that it doesn't feel so self-aggrandizing, that takes a lot of pressure off too. So that's why a co-hosted podcast can be a great way to go, because it takes the spotlight off you a little bit.
For sure. And it just gives you the opportunity to come up with new ideas and get new perspectives, because she's in a completely different business industry than me. So she could bring ideas that I would never think of and vice versa. So I think it's a win-win for both of us and then our potential viewers.
Yes, absolutely. Viewers and listeners, I'm sure that you guys will build up an audience very fast, particularly as a collab. I think that's really cool. Now, you mentioned we got through, I think, four or five questions, the last that were on your agenda the last time we spoke, and we stopped at number five on your list here. And it's a long list. You've got a good agenda here. And we'll just get through a couple before we close things off here. But you said if you started an e-com business from scratch, who or what positions would be your first hire? My generic answer, before I get into more specific answer for you, my generic answer for brands is typically, and especially when they're starting out, is you need to find people that will plug the gaps that you and your co-founder or co-founders don't have the skills you don't have, the stuff you don't do, the stuff you don't want to do, the stuff you don't like doing, and the stuff you don't want to learn how to do. So what that means is, I think what you explained to me is that your co-founder is more on the financial side, the contract negotiation side, the accounting side of the business. So from a financial literacy perspective, it feels like you've got the business basis pretty covered there and you don't want to have to think about that stuff. From a branding perspective, from a positioning perspective, from a copywriting perspective, it feels like you've got that covered, and soon you're going to have the content piece covered as well from the sounds. And so what immediately leaps to mind off the backside of that is an operations specialist. Someone who can own, because it doesn't sound like you or your business partner really want to own op and all the distribution and customer service and all those pieces that, sure, you could, between you and your business partner, you could cover them and do a half pie good job, but it's not something either of you totally love, and it's not something that you can optimize the business around. And so operations is absolutely mission critical to every business. And so I would say bringing in even a part-time or fractional CO, chief operations officer or chief operating officer, someone that you could bring in on a fractional basis. So they're not an employee, they're a contractor. They become effectively deeply embedded in your business. You fully open the kimono to them. They get to understand the financials. They get to understand the sourcing. They get to understand everything operational about your business. And then what they do is they help to make sure that things like supply chains are optimized. Things like fulfillment partners are, contracts are signed to make sure that, you know, all the relationships across the business, the professional, the technical, as well as the financial relationships and commercial relationships are all exactly as they need to be, making sure that NDAs get signed, making sure that all the legal stuff is tickety-boo. They operationally, they think of all the minutiae of shit that you have to deal with as a business, setting up business bank accounts and making sure that those are all current and making sure that your business registrations, wherever they may be, wherever they may be in the world, are up to date and kept current. Making sure that things like web domains get renewed, making sure that all the shit that people don't think about, that all the ops behind the scenes, all of the gears, all the gearing that runs these businesses, a lot of that is where an ops specialist really starts to be worth their weight in gold. So it can be an ops manager, it can be an ops director, it can be a COO, whatever they want to be. But my recommendation is get someone who is seriously good, particularly and experienced with e-commerce operations, because they are different. Now, if you've got an omni-channel business and you've got physical stores and you've got online, then that's a slightly different set of experiences and skills you're going to be looking for. You want someone that's got experience, ideally with omni-channel, but definitely with pure play experience. You want them to have experience with that. And I would say that you guys, and we haven't talked about this before, and I'll bring it up for the first time now, I suspect that as much as you guys want to be a D2C brand, I suspect that you will pretty rapidly want to do at least some B2B. And you will want to sell B2B to stabilize the business, to get broader distribution, to get the cash flow flowing from multiple channels. CAC is extremely high in direct to consumer. And so unless you've got a pile of cash, the B2B side can start to fill the buckets and put fuel in the rocket of D2C and vice versa. You're going to get that feedback loop from your direct customers in terms of product development and customer service and remarketing and all that stuff you're going to get through that direct consumer experience. You're going to get a lot of zero and first party data, but you're not going to be out of the gate doing very much distribution. And so therefore, you're not going to have very many economies of scale. And therefore, your unit cost and your unit economics may not be great from day one if you're pure play D2C. Whereas if you come out the gate and you don't even necessarily need to do B2B e-commerce out of the gate, you can do manual B2B transactions out of the gate. And I think that is a really, really solid go-to-market plan for you guys to really rapidly achieve economies of scale across all channels. So I think you're going to have to think about that. And someone that knows B2B ops and B2C/D2C ops is going to be worth their weight in gold.
Interesting. Yeah. My partner and I have both talked about who's going to take over the operations. And right now we're both doing it. We're both doing as much as we can, learning as much as we can. But I think you're right. Eventually, once we get a little bit further down the line, we'll definitely need some sort of operations specialist, because when you're starting something new, you don't know what you don't know. So we don't even know the right questions to ask. Even just having someone part-time that has the experience, it's going to be way better than what we could ever provide. So thank you.
Yeah, and you're going to start learning by having someone who's effectively a consultant or a contractor. It de-risks that kind of, because if you were to go full bore and say, because good operations bosses and managers, they're very expensive. You can easily spend $200,000 a year on an ops director. Very easy. And so I think that, and you don't need someone full-time, at least initially, because you're still small. And so you're gonna need someone who's really operationally savvy for 2 to 5 hours a week, 1 hour a day, right? Devoted to your business and devoted to you guys. And the great thing about that is they can also upskill you guys. You're never going to be operational experts, but you need to be operationally savvy, and you need to know what you don't know. And you need to be able to start developing the skill of looking around corners at what's coming at you. Supply chain disruptions, blah, 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 right? And how you're going to deal with that, and how you're going to establish multiple routes to market and all sorts of things. And so I think that having a seriously skilled ops specialist in the business, even on a fractional basis, is going to just be so valuable to you guys and so low risk, because you could just start out with just a few hours a week. And that's gonna bring massive value to guys. So I think that's the logical next step.
For sure. And let me ask you this: is it pretty common for someone to have both the operational experience from like the back end of Shopify, so setting up the integrations for like warehouse management, inventory management, stuff like that, as well as working with the traditional like supply chain, 3PLs, manufacturers, distribution channels? Is it pretty common for people to have both e-commerce operational experience and the tactical like experience, or is that?
It's a unicorn person. I've got a little bit of that experience. I wouldn't say I'm COO level ops specialist, but I'd say I'm a good ops director, operations manager level of ops specialist, but with a deep expertise in e-commerce and omnichannel operations. And I think that's really, you are a little bit looking for a unicorn there, but I would say that is less unicorn as of 2023 than it would have been even 5 years ago, particularly because Shopify now is pretty much owns the D2C space from an e-commerce platform perspective. They've got more merchants on their platform than any other in the D2C space. And so because of that, there is a lot of skill set out there with a deep, pretty deep understanding of Shopify, or at least someone who's technically savvy enough that they can explore what options you've got out there in terms of 3PLs and, okay, asking the right questions. Do you have a native out-of-the-box integration with Shopify? Great. What does that look like? Awesome. How long is that going to take you to connect us up and get us up and running and into your 3PL system? Are you a 4PL, meaning can you also give customer service on behalf of our brand? Can you take phone calls? Can you be the call center on? Can you manage returns on our behalf? And that's really what differentiates a 3PL versus a 4PL. 3PL is that pure logistics provider, whether that's, you know, first mile, middle mile, last mile, or all three. And then you've got the 4PLs, which offer a whole bunch of ancillary business services alongside the logistics services. So, you know, again, owning all the returns, owning all the phone calls, owning all the emails, owning all the live chats, basically operating Gorgeous on your behalf effectively, right? And so you can outsource that. And 4PLs, there's, of course, business operations companies that can handle customer service, and that's all they do. But a good 4PL will have all the logistics services and all the customer support services all rolled into one. Because remember, if there's a return, then they have to deal with that because it's going to be sent back to them as part of the RMA process. If they have to ship a replacement item, they're going to be the one shipping the replacement item. So it oftentimes makes a ton of sense, at least in the beginning. Now, you're going to want to insource that as soon as possible, because no one's going to be able to give the same brand experience as you and your team, especially in the beginning to get up and running. That combination of both a bit of a dropship model that we had talked about combined with a 4PL service can take a lot of the operational heavy lifting off your plate, because they've already pre-optimized their business for that. They don't need to think about further up. Well, they will optimize as well, but they've already done a lot of work around optimizing their business to deliver the services that they deliver as almost like a SaaS offering. So that would be something I'd seriously look at.
Yeah, I had heard of a 3PL, but 4PL is quite new to me. So I'll have to see what's out there that integrate with Shopify.
Cool. Sounds good. And this is where a great ops specialist would explain all this to you. And they'd say, here's the pros and cons. We could hire a full-time customer service specialist, for example, and it's going to cost us roughly XYZ on a unit economics basis. Or here, if we outsource it, this is what it's going to, we're going to compare these two side by side, both from a commercial perspective, as well as a risk perspective. Because obviously, even if it costs you a little bit more to outsource that to a 4PL, but yet you don't have another full-time employee on the book because you don't know exactly how fast you're going to grow. Sometimes it's worth to pay a little bit more in unit economic cost up front with a vision to only growing your team in line with the growth of revenue and profitability. Listen, Ashley, I've really enjoyed this conversation as I always do. You always have great questions and I realize we only got through one, but it did open up a whole can of worms on lots and lots of other topics. Like Barbara Walters, I like to chase things down the rabbit hole.
Good, lucky for you, I have a lot more questions, so we can answer them next time.
If you'd like to get mentored by Jason for free, head over to greenwoodconsulting.net, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click Get Mentored by Jason.